Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467369.
Yo, what's good? It's Black Trey, and I got a show called Growing Up the Same with Jason Madison, where we talk to guests about their childhood memories that I'm sure everyone can relate to. You even get some life advice at the end. Our show has featured guests like Dom Kennedy, J.J. Redick, Baron Davis, Brian Koppelman, Bomani Jones, Mina Kimes, and many more. Be sure to check us out on the Black Opinions Matter feed under the Count the Dings Network. Oh yeah, and don't forget to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe, rate, and review.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros Podcast. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazney Lambre, joined as always by my partner on the west side of Los Angeles, Nando Vila. What's going on, brother man?
Not much, man. Very, you know, enjoying the hot summer days here in LA. It's getting hotter every day, and it's pretty hot, like in the West Coast. Like, I mean, you saw those temperatures in fucking Portland and shit, like 110 plus. Like, yeah, you got to enjoy the climate change era because it's only going to get worse.
Well, as you know, my people are of the sun, so we having no problems with it. But right. I want to introduce our guest, who I'm really excited for, although I wish he was under sunnier circumstances, not to be all punny about it. But I'm really excited to have him on today because this guy is a veteran Miami journalist. He's the host of the Big Road podcast. David
Bird Road.
Bird Road, excuse me. The Big Wise Bird Road. I fucked it up. My bad. The Bird Road.
No, you unintentionally created an incredible collaboration is what you did.
Let's go.
Crossover.
Let's do it. Can't wait. Our guy, David Quinones of South Florida. What's going on, big dog?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, Lord have mercy. I love it. I love this guy. Greatest guest
from Miami,
ever.
Man. Come on. This is Miami.
Of course, yeah, you ain't got no choice down there, boy. That's a freaking extension of Haiti, straight up and down Miami.
That's right.
One day on this podcast, we're going to get into the difference between Northeast first-gen Haitians and the Miami, South Florida types. Ooh. It's a different breed down there, boy.
We should do a live taping of the podcast in Little Haiti in Miami.
And
break that down and really get into the nuances.
Oh yeah,
we can.
We'll get deep in it. I'll tell you one thing. There's a thriving Creole media down here. A lot of AM radio stations, and wow, you should hear some of that stuff. You guys think that Fox News is crazy?
Oh man,
they will transition directly from in Creole. They'll transition directly from like a straightforward news item to like, and yeah, that's the reason that President Biden, has a voodoo doll, and you're just like, what the fuck did I do here? And I'll ask my friends. I'll be like, what was that, like an expression or something? And it's like, no. They're saying that
serious.
He's being controlled, and I'm like, wow, that's an interesting news segment.
Don't know. People don't know. There's a whole world in Miami AM talk radio. I mean, there's the Creoles. I mean, the Cuban talk radio. I mean, come on, David. Mm-hmm. That is some fucking crazy shit. Like, I don't think people realize just how insane that shit is and how powerful it was as a force to like just rile people up for so long.
I mean, still is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We actually over on Bird Road podcast, we had Andrea Mercado a couple weeks ago, who's a local activist. She came on. She did a listening project with all those Cuban AM stations and basically was just like, you know, track the lie. Holy cow. She had more. She found more stuff than she could even fit into the report. And it's scary as hell.
Yeah.
So, David, we having you on today mainly to talk about, you know, just a tragedy. There's no other way to put it. A condo collapsed, leaving 15 as of just now. I just checked New York Times. 15 dead, 150 people still unaccounted for, which is just, you know, there's no way to even describe how utterly tragic this is. You know, I don't know what else to say, but what the fuck happened?
So, I mean, for those of your listeners who maybe aren't up to date on the story, the basics are that Champlain Towers is in a little tiny town called Surfside. We have about 34 little, kind of like LA, we've got all these little tiny municipalities here in Miami-Dade. Surfside's one of them. This was a 12-story tower that was built way back in 1972 at the outset of this big building boom, kind of a resurgence after a slowdown, because that's what sort of defines Miami, is we have booms and then we have busts. And this was during a boom. At 1:30 a.m. on Thursday, a huge section of this building collapsed. Like you say, there's probably upwards of 150, 160 people who will, I mean, you know, psychically here in Miami, we're trying to gird ourselves for this because it's really unlikely that any of those people are surviving. It's still a search and rescue mission right now, but everybody on the ground is saying, like, don't expect any miracles. Back in 2018, it's also come out that there was a call for $9 million in renovations to some of these structural problems in this building. Read the reporting, great reporting from some of my former colleagues at the Miami Herald that show you that, like, there's been concerns about this building for a really long time and other buildings in the vicinity too. Just 2 days, 36 hours before the collapse, a contractor who was working on the pool took video and photos and posted them. And you could see there was water dripping down. There was exposed rebar. There was like concrete that was buckling, you know. And then another report recently came out too, because everybody's going deep on all the public records, and shows that since the 90s, this building has shrunk has sank 3 inches. 3 inches Jesus. Is a lot. It's not, in, you know, yeah. buildings aren't meant to sink at all. So 3 inches, structural integrity problems, standing water getting into the pool area. I mean, it was a tragedy waiting to happen. And, you know, unfortunately, I think it's probably not going to be the last similar tragedy. It's also not the first tragedy like this that we've seen here in Miami just in recent years. It's the first on this scale. Like, we haven't seen 150 people probably, most likely, like I said, perish in a single event like this. But, you know, we've had some problems here in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, there was the FIU bridge collapse. I think that was in 2017, I believe.
2018, yeah.
That was 2018. That was a yep. brand new bridge I think the building was built in 1981. I think you may have misspoken, but, you know, it's a 40-year-old building. It was right up on what they call the 40-year assessment.
It was built in 72. And what happened is this. In 74, the DEA, this is before me or you's time in Miami, but this happened. Yeah. The DEA building downtown collapsed. There was a collapse of a DEA building. 16 people were hurt. I think about 8 federal employees were killed in that collapse. And they started a 40-year moratorium on buildings where they were like, okay, starting now, every 40 years, and this took place, like you very astutely noted, in 1981. This took place in 1981, so that's why you see it coming up on its 40-year review now. They started that 40-year, and then every 10-year incrementally after that, which, again, it's like security theater. It's like the appearance of safety, but it did do the review. This building went through the review. It, on paper, everybody knew what the problems were. People knew that, oh, there's $9 million that needs to be put into this building. But with the way that we commoditize housing, how are you going to get people to pay for it? There's no mechanism. Yeah. There's no government control. There's no oversight that will actually say, like, hey, this building, it needs to either be condemned, torn down. I mean, these are pretty wealthy people that are living in this building. It's their home. And they're, you know, it's like trying to warn people about things. You just, you know, people value things differently, you know?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think, like you mentioned, the commodification of housing. And I think that's really what's at the core here. When people are like looking at, you know, who's to blame, you know, someone's going to look for someone to blame naturally, you know, and the reality is that there's a whole host of individual actors that are probably to blame. But really the thing to blame is the system, a system in which there is no governmental oversight or real governmental power. When you push this on to individual actors, you know, the rational decision, you tell someone like, this building, it has some damage. We need to fix it. We need to pay $9 million. That's going to cost you out of your pocket $200,000.
Right.
You know, the individual choice there is, you know, most of the time someone's going to be like, yeah, I don't have $200,000 lying around. I don't have an extra, you know, if they do a special assessment and they spread it out over a year or two, I don't have an extra, you know, thousands of dollars a month lying around to pay for this.
Take out a loan, that's another mortgage.
Right.
Of course. And like this idea that like, oh, there's some damage to the building. You think like maybe, oh, okay, like no one assumes the building is going to collapse. You know, so pushing that choice onto the individual, which is what we do in America all the time, it's always going to result in just someone being like, I don't have the money, I'm not going to do it. And so that's why this building was not done. I mean, when you see a lot of the same thing here in California with the wildfires, where like people like know what you have to do. You got to, you know, you got to do these controlled fires in certain areas. But someone's like, you're going to start a fire purposefully like in my backyard? Like, are you insane? Like, no, I'm not fucking doing that, you know, which is why you need a sort like a powerful government to just be like, no, we have to do this for the sake of everyone. We have to do this. And like, yeah, we'll fund it. We'll do whatever it takes. But, you know, this idea that it's pushed onto individuals, the choice is always going to be to just kick the can down the road. I mean, when we talked about, for example, something like the Green New Deal, that was like much maligned and all that stuff. But a key plank of the Green New Deal was to go to a bunch of old buildings and use federal funds to repair them, to make them more energy efficient, to make sure they're not going to fucking collapse. You know, like that this is like a thing that the federal government or a government, like a powerful public entity, has to be responsible for. If you keep on pushing it to individual people, it'll never happen.
Yeah, because then it's at the whims of the market. Like the most depressing and sort of, I don't know how you can say it, but like making you feel helpless thought exercise I've had in the last few days, you know, being somebody who owns property in Miami, is like, let's say that instead of last Thursday, it was next Thursday. And we knew it. We knew that this was going to come. And like, let's say that there's 1% of buildings that are going to fail in this way, or 0.1% of buildings that are going to fail this way. Let's pretend that we had a spreadsheet in front of us with the dates that it's going to happen. We wouldn't have any recourse. We wouldn't have anything to do. All we would have is the information that we could evacuate,
right,
save lives, which is important. But then what? Like, there's no source to actually address the problem. There's no way to fix it, because in a lot of ways, what's happening in Florida, I think, is really closely tied to the way that the climate is changing. And it's a bigger problem than we as a species have faced.
You know, man, that's what I wanted to ask, because Nando mentioned it, and it's perfect, because when something tragic like this, the first instinct is, who do we blame? Who do we put the responsibility on? Like, how can this happen? Because, you know, I seen the story when Nando texted me, is like, yo, a freaking building collapsed in Miami. I'm like, a building? Like, what? Like, how does that happen in 2020, right? Like, that's something I think about, all of those people who died making the railroads and in the coal mines and, you know, building the bridges in New York, etc.
Let me tell you something. There's a piece of American history that a lot of people don't talk about, and it's called the Okeechobee Hurricane. And the Okeechobee Hurricane of 1928, 2,500, probably closer to 5,000 working migrant farmers died in one hurricane around Lake Okeechobee, about, like, I would say two hours from here, less than 2 hours from here. And nobody was held accountable for that. Nobody was held accountable for that. Even though it's 1928, we still knew when hurricanes were coming, but these people were sitting there, you know, in jeopardy without any way to get 25. And I always try to remember, like, this is still the state that did that, you know, like at the end of the day, the footbridge that that Nando was just talking about, it came out after that collapse and in the aftermath of that, that the then mayor of Miami-Dade County, his wife was connected to the firm that was responsible for all the structural errors. The NTSB, the NTSB called it a failure at all levels. And you'd think, like, oh my God, did we take this mayor out and like hang him in the street? No, we elected him to Congress. He's our congressman now. So, like, the hoping that people will be held accountable, it's like enough time, and then people just forget, man. In Miami, we have Florida in general, we have an incredibly short memory. We forget stuff like this so fast.
Squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break down around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Nothing. I was just tired. I'm just stressed a little bit. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. And if you do, you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, if you get started today, you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatment.
Yes, because it makes me wonder, it's like, how do we convince people that safety, just in general, is worth the cost, right? It's easy after the fact to be like, damn, how would we have prevented this? I think beforehand, what the game that our politicians always play is, how are we going to pay for it? Like, this idea that America can't pay for, like, actual safety. We'll pay for shit like safety from Al-Qaeda or fucking ISIS or, you know, crack dealers. We'll put money, we'll pump plenty of money into police, into military, into X, Y, and Z. But something this tangible, like your building collapsing, you know, they'll always sell us on who's going to pay for that. You know, who's going to pay for it? It's just crazy to me. And when you guys say 1970 something, it makes me wonder, like, you know, that's going to be the fucking the scapegoat. It's going to be like, well, these are old buildings. This is, you know,
there's so many buildings that are going to hit their 40-year mark here in a few years. And then on into the future, there are like 60-story high rises on South Beach that are about 20-ish years old right now, 15, 20 years old. Okay, so what happens in 15, 20 years when they hit that mark?
Like, as the water keeps on rising, as the water keeps on rising from below. I mean, but the thing is, the age of the building doesn't matter. There are castles in Europe still standing that were built in the fucking Middle Ages, like perfect integrity. You know, the age of a building doesn't matter. What matters is the materials you use and how well you build it. And I find it not surprising that this building was built, in an era when there was a massive deregulation. There was, the savings and loan deregulation, like all manner of, like, you know, the 1970s neoliberal backlash, which just deregulated a bunch of stuff, made it, you know, easier to just someone to just build shoddy buildings. Like, it used to be you had fucking codes and shit that you had to adhere to. And
there
now,
was a
like,
slowdown. There was lower, there was a slowdown in that area of Bell Harbor, Surfside, like all the way down through Miami Beach. There was this immediately before they built this tower, there was a slowdown in building where everybody was, again, like, you know, Miami is boom bust. That's how we roll. And everything was kind of chill. And then everything kind of ramped up and overheated, just like it is, by the way, right now. Overheating,
yeah, it's
up in the same way.
Man, David, I was going to ask you about that because last time I was in Miami, I mean, it had been a while because of the pandemic. I'm from Miami, also, just in case anyone didn't know, listening at home. I went back home a few weeks ago, and I'm just like, I'm seeing like red hot development just all over the fucking place. And I think like seeing this building collapse in Surfside, like right on the beach, just made me think, like, what are we doing? Like, Miami is like not in the shape to be building anything right now. I mean, Miami is like ground zero for climate catastrophe. Everyone knows this, and there is no real solution to the problem because of the nature of Miami's Miami's on limestone for the most part. Water comes up from below. Like, even if you build dams, the problem still persists. So is anyone thinking about anything but the next, you know, quarterly earnings at all? Is anyone thinking like 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Answer to that question.
I know the answer to that question, but what the fuck's going on? Is it,
you kind of allude to it though, right? Because you talked about like, you know, I think about 9/11, right? And I think about after 9/11, did we sit down and did we examine our role globally as a country? Like, why would people want to do this to us? No, that's not a reaction. Our reaction was
for our French fries.
Yeah. And then even now, even today, when we talk about what a mistake our, you know, national response to 9/11 was, the tenor is mostly just like, oh, we went to war with the wrong countries. And we never like had any kind of introspection or thought or anything like that about our role. And this is similar in a lot of ways, because like what I think we're going to see is we're going to see in the next year or two, we're going to see like a raft of new regulations where it's like, this has to be 24 inches apart instead of 36 inches apart. These pylons have to look like this. You know, we're going to, instead of every 40 years, it's going to be every 20 years, but it's all nibbling around the edges of a real problem. We have here in Miami-Dade a new department of resiliency. And I'm telling you guys this right now, over the next 20 years, resiliency, that word is going to be the new grift. It's going to be the new scam. It's going to be the new way to sell you solar panels that you can't afford. It's going to be a new way to, you know, climate ready your house that will still just get fucking washed away in a hurricane. It's going to be the new look. We're doing something without actually having to do anything. And the real solution to your question, Nando, is a really painful one that you're never going to get the electeds to talk about. And it is managed retreat. It's saying, yeah, look, this part of the world, human beings probably were never meant to live here. We figured it out for a couple hundred years, but we can't do it anymore. We have to take a step back. But you'll never get elected officials to talk about that, because you're talking about shrinking their tax base and reducing their influence, yeah, and making them less powerful. Why would the mayor of Miami-Dade County, who's a mayor of 2.8 million people, want to become a mayor of 1 million people and with the goal towards being zero? Like no power structure would willfully give itself up like that and sacrifice itself on an altar of human decency, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and Waz, what you're asking about, like, you know, this idea of like, who's going to pay for it. I do think it's like, I mean, there is some sort of visceral logic to like, well, if you own the apartment, you got to pay for it, you know? And the reality is for these buildings in which, you know, we're not engineers, like we're not like the people building these buildings.
That's what the people it should be everyone should pay for. Who made this shit.
So obviously the contractors have to be regulated to build a certain way, but in terms of like, if there is, say there is a problem, and even if it was like all built in the perfect way, the reality is that everyone should pay for it. You know, yeah, everyone should pay for it. Yes. Like we should all chip in. Like, and that's how a society works. You know, that's true, not just of housing, but of healthcare or of education or of any of these other things that we on the left believe are rights, right? Like, we believe that everyone deserves a place to live. Everyone deserves a quality education. Everyone deserves healthcare. All these things that we see as rights, to push the costs onto an individual for how much they consume of said right, is always going to create warped incentives. And what we really need to do is, if we are a real society, is that we all pay for it. You know,
we gotta decouple it. It'll be much cheaper. Decouple it from the markets. We have to decouple it from these individual. Oh, this is my thing. We treat houses, homes, the very bottom level of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs or whatever. The thing you need, shelter. We treat it like it's a big screen from Best Buy. It's a big purchase that we all have to make. And if you make a bad one, you messed up. But it's like, no, like people, everybody, even you don't need to watch TV, although I kind of do, but you don't need to, you know, drink soda. You don't need to do all these other consumer choices, but you choose to, and they're satisfied and served by markets.
You do need a
everybody
place
needs
to live.
A home. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a safe, reliable place to live that's not going to fall in on you. And until you decouple this entire everything on that bottom chart, by the way, food, housing, healthcare, a bunch of stuff. Until you decouple those things from markets, then you're always going to have this, like what Nando's talking about, where it's like, well, it's your responsibility, asshole. Figure it out. You know, you're gonna, oh, you need to replace your roof. I'll tell you right now, one thing that nobody talks about out here in Miami, when there is the big diaspora and when people eventually have to leave, to your point, it's not going to come from above, from a hurricane. It's going to come from below, from water, saltwater encroachment on our water table. And we, about the estimate is like 60,000 non-functioning septic tanks in this county. It's like,
Jesus,
literally,
it's gonna smell like shit.
A shitty problem. We've got the
it's gonna smell like ass.
It's gonna be really bad, man. We have 60,000 non-functioning septic tanks in this county, and that's only what they know of. Probably like way more than that. So it's a thing that we have to tackle collectively, because nobody just has that money in their pocket to drop on it.
And, you know, the reason why I brought up the developers and the deregulation, because I think about the standard way that Americans tend to think about something. It's right. It's like, all right, you build it. Those people and their family should get to sue you. You know, so some people maybe should go to jail, X, Y, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This building was built. The contractors and developers, like, do these people still even exist?
Probably not.
Do these companies even exist? And it's like you said, the other thing that you said was you know, some people would be like, well, you bought a fucked up product. So it's your, it's like, how the hell was I supposed to know they completely fucked up the makings of this building? We're supposed to have standards of building these massive structures in place, you know, put forth, set forth by our government, and people have to abide by them. And when they fuck up, people get thrown in jail. People get sued to oblivion, et cetera. I'm like, how do you even track responsibility for this to the original people who fucked this up, right? One, the deregulators, the politicians, and two, the contractors and developers who were just like, man, fuck it. Let's just do it. Do it as cheap as possible. Let's move on. Let's build the next thing, sell the next thing. Like, you, there's nothing to be done here on that front, on in the standard way that Americans are used to responsibility blame. Being finding meted out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I try to personally, that's a trap for me, because I feel like if you live in Miami, and I suspect it's kind of the same, whether, I mean, like I lived in New York too, and it's the same in LA. There's a trap where you can go, you can spend all day finding people to blame for all the, you know, messed up stuff everywhere that you look around, and you won't be wrong. You can blame 10 people and you'll be right every time. I think that there are some solutions, and they're just so far from what we talk about. Like when people talk about like the Overton window, what's acceptable discourse? What is the thing that we can actually address? Like 10 years ago, nobody would talk about Medicare for all. Today, it's like, it's within that window you can actually talk about it. But we need to be talking about, specifically with Miami, we need to be talking about things like baby bonds for kids who are born here that are eventually going to have to leave. Like, yeah. I mean, in the same way that the baby bond program the proposal works for other communities, Miami needs to be one of them. We need to have money set aside for people to eventually leave here, unfortunately. Like, there is going to be a diaspora in the next 20,
like a refugee crisis. You mean it's like literally domestic, like a refugee crisis.
I'm guessing, I know my neighborhoods. I drive around Miami. I know this place, man. This is one of the poorest cities in the country. And this is going to be a place where, I mean, maybe the biggest diaspora since like the Indian Removal Act or Trail of Tears. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of poor, mostly Black, mostly Hispanic, a lot of immigrants, first, second generation, undocumented people, working class people, disabled people, marginalized people. There's going to be death. There's going to be sickness. There's going to be shortages of resources. And we're going to be trying to tackle this with a system that we built during good times before all this bad stuff started happening.
Yeah.
That if anybody who's tried to deal with anything on the state level in Florida, like for instance, the unemployment system, it's Byzantine. It doesn't work. It's a disaster. It's like falling apart. This is going to be the kind of thing that stretches across generations unless we lay the groundwork right now to be able to bail out these, the people in Surfside. God bless them. I feel horrible that they died, and it's terrible. It's a tragedy, and I would never say anything to minimize that, right? But the governor, right after it happened, he said he came out with a statement about the people that were, you know, the survivors. And only about 10 or 15 people actually needed help to find a place to stay. That makes sense. The people there, they're pretty well off. The class-wise, they're
beachfront doing well. Property.
And that's a horrible, like, I don't want that to come across as like insensitive, but the fact of the matter is, like, it's going to start happening in communities where there isn't that level of resources to be able to just be like, damn, I guess I'm staying at the Ramada tonight. You know, it's going to start happening in places like Overtown and Little Haiti. And it's going to start happening to people who can't, who don't have that that discretionary income to be able to suck it up and get a hotel for a couple of months until they find a new house or whatever.
David, I think part of the thing that disgusted me so much last time I was in Miami, I can't tell you like how the last time I was in Miami, I mean, I drove by Mark Cuban's yacht, which was like the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. It dawned on me. I mean, seeing everything, you know, all the like mega nightclubs now, the massive new buildings, all of them, you know, luxury buildings, just all the new restaurants and shit. Like, it dawned on me that like Miami is becoming the Vegas of the East Coast. And I know you have ties to Las Vegas with your podcast and stuff. It's becoming the Vegas of the East Coast with a more kind of internet, like it's becoming the international playground for a global oligarchy, you know, mostly from Latin America, but also Europe and also increasingly Russia. Russia and other places, like the global oligarchy, like the worst people on the planet.
Apparently Silicon Valley too, apparently.
Yeah, Silicon Valley is the latest trend, right? With all the Bitcoin bros and our mayor, our illustrious mayor, like, you know, deciding to pay his employees and his city employees in Bitcoin or whatever the fuck he's doing. But it's becoming this kind of playground for the international oligarchic class. They have a great time in Miami. Miami is a great time if you know, yeah, if you want to have a great time.
If you got money, Miami is the best place.
Like, is the best. And it strikes me that, like, as this city is like on its last legs, because really, like, there is no solution to the sea level rise problem. Like this, I don't know how to like explain this to people, but like, well, they just like, they'll figure something out. They'll build like a wall or some shit. And I'm like, no. It comes from below, you know, like, unless you build like a massive like steel reinforced ground, you know, or something. It is the water's coming, baby. And you know, when it's coming, no one really knows. I mean, every time a scientist kind of looks at reevaluates climate change, like it turns out that their worst predictions were actually like too conservative.
Too nice.
Yeah. Every time they amend their predictions, every time the Union of Concerned Scientists amends their predictions, it only goes one direction.
They're always like,
we
undershot it.
We undershot that a little bit every time.
I mean, I saw that it was over 100 degrees in the Arctic Circle last week. So it's happening. Miami is like finishing as a city. It is not going to exist in you know, whether it's 50 years or 30 years or 20 years. Like, we really don't know. What we do know is that it's not going to exist. That international oligarchic class is going to find another playground. Yep. You know, like, it's going to be easy for them to pack their bags and leave.
Just make another playground.
They'll make it.
Like, literally. You know?
Go to Wyoming. They're already doing that in Wyoming and Montana. The last 25 years.
Like the new one.
Of course.
The new one.
Dude, look at the Qataris. They were just like, we'll just make something for the Olympics. We'll fly in a bunch of migrant workers from poor countries all over the world. We'll just make it. It's fine.
Slaves.
Yeah,
it's fine. They always figure it out when they need to do that.
Yeah,
but the people that are going to be left behind are the working class people. And if there is no, like, you know, essentially a New Deal level program to relocate those people, to, you know, find a way to reintegrate them in other parts of the country, I mean, it's hard to imagine. But we're going to have like a massive refugee crisis within the United States,
domestically, sense, and not just for Miami, although Miami will be the first. I've got kind of like this operating theory about Miami where Miami is the rest of the country, but like 20 years in the future. So like you can gauge what's going on, what's good. Like, and that's good in a lot of ways. We're multicultural, we're multilingual. We're more well integrated, like different people. We get like, you know, I can eat any kind of food I want. I can hang out with any kind of people I want. But at the same time, we're also feeling the effects of the stuff that's going to end up.
You know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking, but I don't want to eat something that's bad for me, like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. I love the chicken pesto bowl! Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
You know, knocking this country out of the box down the road, because that we can't run away from or buy our way out of. And those people that you mentioned, they're going to be able to dip whenever they want. That's my big problem with this quote unquote exodus from Silicon Valley that supposedly is coming here to Miami. It, in reality, it's mostly just like Bitcoin guys, but you know, one way or another, these people are liquid. They're going to, like, the minute that there's, they're going to do the same thing that they did to the Bay Area. They're going to just leave. I mean, they're going to, you know, ruin San Francisco, go across the Bay, try to ruin Oakland, and then leave. And like, why do we want to welcome that? Why does Francis Suarez, the city of Miami's mayor, not my mayor, by the way, I don't live in the city, but why is he so open for this? Is it because, like, he really thinks it's going to result in the kind of innovation that'll redefine our city, which is already pretty good? Like, we're a good city, man. Like, our people are good. We don't need more of that. Or is it because he thinks it's going to increase his tax base? I would guess it's the latter.
Well, we go from extremely depressing and sobering news to something a little less so. Donald Rumsfeld died today.
And pour one out, baby. Pour one out.
Pour one out. Rest in peace to a real one. Rest in power.
Waz, you and Donald, I are going out. We're gonna go out to the club and, you know, celebrate Rummy in style tonight.
Do it the right way.
Do it the right way.
The people of Iraq were not available for comment, unfortunately.
No. And listen, and a few months ago we had a similar death in Rush Limbaugh. And it's like, look, I'm not gonna celebrate somebody's death, but I'm not gonna pretend that this person's life didn't include some miserable, horrible shit that the effects of which will reverberate for years past after these homies are gone. And so the same can be said for Rumsfeld. You know, most notably, this guy was the key guy, the key architect, along with Dick Cheney, of the Iraq War. Yeah. Conservative estimates say 500,000 Iraqis died during this war. 500,000 people no longer exist as a result of a meaningless, useless war. And Donald Rumsfeld was at the center of that. Like, that's him.
Yeah.
That's on his resume.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they did it so that they could start the, you know, a new Cuba, a new whatever. It's just going to be a capitalist playground. We get to set all the rules. We're not going to have any of these fucking idiot liberals in Congress. We're not going to have any of that crap. We're not going to deal with grassroots organizations. We're not going to deal with, you know, an established huge political media. We don't got none of that shit. We're going to go in and do everything that we want. And 500,000 dead completely justified it, which, of course, they failed miserably at every single turn, and they were bumbling fucking idiots. Wait, and it was horrible.
Hang on. You're saying that right now Iraq is not a utopian democracy?
No, I'm
gonna have to double check that. I'm pretty sure that
and it's not a capitalist wet dream either. It's none of those things. It's a fucking disaster, unmitigated disaster that we created on our own. And by we, I mean the United States federal government. And you know, of course, George Bush has his responsibility too, where people was like, relax, dude. Ellen can't just take a picture with George Bush. I'm like, it's kind of disgusting.
Or Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama can't. Well,
Michelle
Obama
gave him like a little, breath.
Now mint. Later gave him a, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and so say, Donald Rumsfeld died today, and that's his legacy.
I'll say the thing that, in my estimation, at least, the thing that set Rumsfeld aside from a lot of other people that we sort of associate him with, like whether it be going back into, you know, the Ford era all the way up through now, up through like Anthony Blinken and other, you know, people who set the tone for our policies. We usually get, as Americans, like, we get sold the escalation. We get sold that there could be a war. Like, at least during our lifetimes, everybody on this phone call, it's mostly been like, there might be a war with Iran, got to build up stockpiles. There might be a war with Russia. There might be a war with this country. Most of our leaders sell us on the escalation. Very few follow through and actually do the horrible idea. And he is the one, the architect, the guy that was like, you know what? All this time that we've been getting the American people ready to go to war, we should actually do that. And, you know, it's going to be a windfall economically for the people that we give a shit about, arms dealers and, you know, the defense industry. It's going to go great for them. I mean, you know, what will it do to the country and to the world? I mean, let's not worry about that. I'll be dead by 2021, you know, and like that's where I think Rumsfeld is uniquely evil. You know, somebody like a Trump crony who maybe talked about, you know, war and alluded to war, head fake towards war, and didn't really ever do it. Rumsfeld actually did embroil us in these horrible things.
He not only walked the walk, he not only talked the talk, he walked the walk. I mean, I think it's hard to overstate just how evil and destructive Donald Rumsfeld was. I mean, he, first of all, I don't think people realize, but he was Secretary of Defense in the 1970s with Gerald Ford. Like, he was like around for a long, long time. And in terms of Iraq, which is the thing that he's most famous for, right? He was the guy selling Iraq from the administration day in and day out. He'd do a press conference basically every fucking day, selling the country on Iraq, which, as you said, killed hundreds of thousands of people for no fucking reason. The thing that people don't realize is that Donald Rumsfeld had been around, and the war with Iraq, as we understand it, did not start with the invasion in 2003. Our war with Iraq started in the 1990s, and that thing was a continuous policy that has to be understood with a little bit of a deeper root. Donald Rumsfeld was instrumental in arming Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, because Saddam Hussein at the time was fighting Iran, which is our big bad enemy always. The United States' big bad enemy is Iran. So because Iraq and Iran were fighting, we supported Saddam. Then when, you know, shit changed a little bit, we decided, no, you know, we need Saddam out. So then they spent 25 years essentially destroying Iraq, a country that wasn't like, I wouldn't say it was like a, you know, great, it's not like Iceland or some, you know, functioning, but it was a stable functioning country.
It had its own, you know, quote unquote, the word that they loved to use back then, basket case, right? That was the word that media loved to tell you as a media consumer that this country needs us. They need us. Trust us. Yeah. They need our help. Yeah.
Right. But Iraq was a functioning country. It had, you know, a healthcare system. It had fucking roads, infrastructure. Like, it was a functioning country. Was it like a beacon of democracy? Did it have, you know, all the splendors that we enjoy every day here in the West?
Beacon of democracy. You mean like our great friend Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, exactly. Like- But we essentially destroyed this country over the course of 25 years through bombing, incessant bombing campaign, economic sanctions that killed hundreds of thousands of children and people throughout the years, and then an invasion and subsequent civil war, insurrection that created something called ISIS. You know, just absolutely insane shit, of which Donald Rumsfeld is, if you had to like pick one person, and it's not always one person, it's never one person, it's always like a big systemic thing, but if you really had to distill it to one person, Rummy would absolutely be right there. You know, one of the great crimes of history, which was the United States assault on the Iraqi people in the last 30 years. So yeah, RIP to a real one. Waz, we're gonna hit the club and you know, we're going to pour one out for Rummy.
Pour one out. Yeah, man.
Pour one out, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank David Quinones, man. Thank you so much. Killed us with information. Of course, everybody, make sure you're watching every other Count the Dings and listening to every other Count the Dings offering, whether it be Cinephobe or the Mailbag or the OG Bomb Show. David, please tell the people where they could find you so they could, you know, get at you, please.
Yeah, Thank you. And thanks for having me on, man. It was a blast talking to you guys. You can get at me on Twitter is usually where I am. David, @David_Quiñones. You can follow the show at Bird Row Podcast, birdrowpodcast.com. Yeah, and we're all over social media and whatnot. So
appreciate you guys, man. We will see you guys next week. We're out of here. Peace out.
Later.